Hello, Spacers. This week we have Elise Holiday. That's two L's and an A and no I from BecomingNot.com on the show. I know Elise Holiday. She's been a speaker for Environments for Humans at our SAS Summit. Just I've known her around. She's a fellow Austinite, so I've met her. She's an awesome person. And I'm so glad we had to talk to her today. And we talked a lot of things. We talked about what it takes to organize a physical conference. This is our first year organizing the SAS Conf that's taking place in Austin. Let's talk about how she got into the web, her passion / major interest in web development, diversity in conferences, diversity in speakers, getting new speakers into our community on conferences and stuff like that. So it's really a lot of topics we talked about. So I hope you enjoy the show. Just a couple of notes. First off, because I think Elise was here, she's really nice. She gave us a discount code of NBSPTV, which is good for $75 off the SAS Conf. So as far as I know, that's like the biggest discount I've seen that they're giving out for it. So definitely pick it up and deep dive into SAS with everyone in Austin. So the good news is that, you know, it is in Austin. So it's breakfast tacos, smothered and SAS. So definitely go check it out. So great to see you there. I'll be hosting a couple of virtual conferences for Environments for Humans in November. First one is UX Rebels Summit on November 17th. That's great for freelancers and UX professionals. So we talk about a lot of things. Well, some things that UX is pros probably need to have or don't have in their skill set. One is like a portfolio. One is how to design a great UX team if you need to. We also be talking about accessibility and how we should engineer that into our usability type stuff, as well as tools and gadgets and techniques for researching. After that, we'll be also doing an online conference, SAS Summit, and each be 2 days, probably like 12 sessions total. So you ask questions to the speakers directly wherever you are in the world, as long as you have a great internet connection. And then if you can't make it for whatever reason or for miss a session or not, you can definitely drop by and look at the recordings afterwards. So that's at sassummit.com and also uxrebelsummit.com. Another thing is be sure to go to iTunes, search for Non-Breaking Space Show in the podcast area and subscribe. And so that's the best way. You can get the latest show. That's always there. It's always fresh and popping hot. And if you wouldn't mind, while you're at iTunes, just give us a 5-star review and leave a little message. Let us know what you think about the show. We love it. It helps us carry on. It's kind of a labor of love to do this. And if you like it, if there's some ideas you want us to do to improve the show, let us know. And then also, if you are a fan of the show and don't mind doing a little voice work for us, maybe record a quick MP3 for us. I like to record like a bumper for the show, so it's not always my voice on here. So it'd be kind of nice to get some other interesting people on the show. So just let us know. Just holler at us at NBSPTV on Twitter. I think that's it for now. Enjoy the show and see you next week. So how are you doing? Doing all right?
Yeah, I'm doing pretty good. Just trying to stay afloat. It's been crazy planning SASConf and a wedding and then work all at the same time. But
Wow. So I know
every time response that I tell people, they're like, holy crap.
Yeah, because our DevConf is next week and I can't believe it's happening, actually. It's happening, really? It's like, oh man, and I'm like, it can't be happening because I have all this stuff to do for it. Mm-hmm, I'm like, wait, yeah, I'm responsible for all that stuff.
Oh crap!
Yeah,
well, it's funny. Somebody, I forget who I was talking to, and they were like, "I'm so excited for SASConf," and I'm like, "I'm not. Like, I'm freaking out. Like, I'm not excited."
Yeah, they look at you weird for saying that. I'm like, why?
Yeah. Well, and it does. I mean, at the risk of sounding like I'm complaining, like I'm traveling next week doing recruiting for work. Mm-hmm. And then I'm back a week and then it's fun fest. And then immediately it's SaskConf. So like, I'm going to be gone for a week of my planning time. And like, so I'm just, I'd like the list of stuff is so unbelievable, mm-hmm. but it's actually kind of okay now. We got, a couple weeks ago, we, our venue fell through. And so oh, wow. we were like scrambling to find new venue space and make sure like lodging for the speakers was held up because we were moving venues. And so like all the stuff that I thought was going to be done was not done.
Right.
And so, and then I got sick and I was just like, oh. I can't handle this. But it's settled down and we have workshops out now. So like all right. of that stuff is settled. So now it's just like tactical, you know, like how do we feed people? Mm-hmm. So it'll be fine.
So I checked the site. So it's SaskConf, it's happening. What specifically? I know it's soon, but like what date?
Yeah. So it's November 11th and 12th uh-huh. are the actual like conference talks. So we're doing talks and a couple of included workshops. And then some discussions. And so that's the 11th and 12th. So Wednesday, Thursday. Mm-hmm. And then the 13th is Unconference. So it's like the community day where people can come and attendees can present. You can kind of get together in little groups and like hack on stuff and talk about stuff that was presented at the conference itself. And this was really kind of born out of ways to get more people to present and like get the attendees actually involved instead of just like sitting in a dark room and listening to somebody else for 2 days. So that's the Friday, the 13th. And then the 14th, we're doing additional paid workshops. Okay. So this is, they're not part of the conference ticket, but you can purchase a workshop ticket in addition. And this is the first year we're offering this. We just launched these today. Oh. So Wes Boss is going to do his Gulp workshop. And then... Yeah, which is, I love Wes. He's great and super funny. And so I'm really excited to have him. Mm. And then Katie Kabalson from Sparkbox is going to do their Designing Today's Web, their responsive design workshop. Yeah. And then Roy is going to do his Advanced SaaS as a full day workshop. So for those like who really want to get really, really deep in the complicated SaaS stuff, you'll have a whole full extra day of complicated SaaS stuff.
So, and those are all three awesome workshops. So I looked at all of them. I was like, I can go to all of these. These are great.
Yeah, they're all really, really good.
So are they at the same venue though? Like, cause the venue is North Door in East Austin. Is that right?
Yeah. So the conference days will be at North Door. The party on the 12th and the unconference day will be at Brew and Brew, which is a little coffee shop just down the street from North Door. They have a little space next to Brew and Brew that we get to kind of take over. It's a really, really cool little space. And we get a discount for attendees at the coffee bar and we get to hang out there all day. Mm-hmm. The additional workshops on Saturday will be at Capital Factory.
Oh, nice. Yeah. Capital Factory's the bomb.
Yeah.
I work there.
So. Yeah. Yeah, it's a good spot. And you know, plenty of room and really, really good Wi-Fi, which is definitely more of a requirement for the workshops than like for talks and stuff. So
yeah, that's awesome. Yeah.
Good.
Cool. So I think conferences are just massive logistical nightmares that have to come together. And so it's Ari and I just, you know, we do a whole bunch of them, but we enjoy putting them on, but they just wipe you out. And so it's and this year we actually made an effort to go to other people's conferences. Yeah. so to actually and learn and enjoy a conference.
Yeah.
Just feel what it's like, because it's been like so many years since, because we're just like running around all the time. It's just like we need to take a break and realize what why we do this and what other people are doing. And so we went to Bennett Park, Austin.
Mm-hmm. How's this that? Year.
Oh, it was great. It was really nice. It was like almost like a homecoming, really. Cause like, I know everyone. It was just like,
right.
You know, just like, hey, you're here. You're here. Like,
yeah. Everybody's here.
Yeah. I ran to my editor from, like, I was like, you're here. Like, oh my gosh. So like, you know, like, so, but yeah, it was nice. And so, and they, you know, they always put on a good show. And, and then we went to like VidCon, which is a YouTube conference, which
interesting.
Yeah, maybe feel like twice as old as I am, because like I didn't grow up on YouTube.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, like I don't like I Google. I don't know YouTube, whatever. But yeah.
This is my first year organizing, so it's definitely interesting to kind of see the other side you know, of what it takes. And it's kind of funny, actually. Everybody talks about how difficult weddings are to organize, but frankly, I've had a way easier time planning my wedding than SaskConf so far. We'll see. We I don't know if that'll last, but
why is that?
You don't have to sell tickets. a couple reasons. I mean, definitely not selling tickets is one. Like, your budget doesn't change based on selling tickets or like your attendees,
right?
Which is definitely part of it. You know, having with a wedding, we have a set budget rather than, you know, everything kind of being dependent on what we can get, you know, from sponsors and from attendees. And you don't have to have Wi-Fi, which is nice. That's kind of a pain. But they're really similar, like feeding a couple hundred people and, you know, venues and like, you know, chairs and it's a lot the same, but, I think honestly, the hardest part about organizing is it's all volunteers, right? So there's like lots of cooks in the kitchen and, you know, things, get, you know, divvied out and then missed. And then, you know, somebody gets one piece of information that doesn't always translate. And, not to like diss on my fellow SaskConf organizers, they're all amazing, but I mean, it's just the way it goes when you're planning a big event with a ton of moving parts and you have multiple people taking care of it. So
right.
It's been a challenge, but I think it's all coming together really well. We're down to like, we got all the swag stuff ordered. Salesforce was awesome. They're our biggest sponsor. They donated a ton of money to do swag and ordered all of it. So we're gonna have some really, really cool stuff. The header on the new site's a little sneak peek at the new swag. So I'm really excited. You know, we're getting into like, what can we feed people? Like, do, you know, Tex-Mex dinner for all of our, you know, out of state attendees. And so we're getting into the fun stuff and not like doing venue contracts anymore, which is not the fun part.
No, it's not. It's
not at all. But I mean, the speakers, I'm so excited. Our speakers and all the talks and everything looks so good. I've been seeing some of their outlines and like notes on discussions and like how we're going to run things come in and their content. It just looks really, really spectacular. So I'm so excited.
Yeah.
Makes it worth it.
Yeah. I like the space too. The space is good. I've been to a couple events there and in that
North.
Yeah. So it's, I think it will lend itself to a conversation, like not conversation, but more of a community spirit.
Mm-hmm.
And also there's a bar right behind you too. So it's like, you know,
it's a good space. They have a giant, nice big screen and hopefully we'll be able to make it, you know, kind of comfy in there. And, yeah, it should be really good. And I love that we're right next to, we're just like just on the block from Brew and Brew. And so on the 12th for our closing party, instead of like, you know, having talks and then like a break and then going to a different place, you know, across town or whatever for, you know, dinner, we're just going to move everybody over to Brew and Brew and feed them dinner there. And so it's right there. And so I think we'll get a lot of conversations that kind of continue on, you know, from the day over into the party.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's hard sometimes. I've been to a lot of conferences where there's a big gap. You know, it's like, okay, now go feed yourself dinner and come to the party later, but there's no dinner at the party. So it's like, well, if I go, there's like a weird hour. It's like not long enough to go home or to the hotel, but like it's awkward sometimes. And so we're trying to make that a little smoother.
Yeah. It's always nice. It's always because like we always have to take up a hypothesis and say like, well, if we do this, and then this should happen. And then, you know, our goal is to get people to talk to each other and have a good time and to learn to network and get inspired. So will this maximize, you know, that happening? And so it's,
yeah.
So, I mean, and like, I've been a part of Austin now. Like, it's like, oh, once you're done, you just go out the doors that you came in and then have the happy hour. And it was like, you can't even get better than that. So it was like,
yeah,
there's like zero feet have to travel. So,
right.
But it's still like there. So so you have SaskConf, so you're traveling and you got fun fest. And then you have SaskConf, and then when's the wedding? Like, how far away is wedding?
April.
Oh, okay. So it's not.
Yeah. No, we got some time, but
yeah, you got nothing to complain about.
There's not a plane. Oh yeah, but we're supposed to be sending out like save the date. And I've just been like, oh, like, yeah. Forget it. It's not going to happen until after SaskCon.
Yeah. See, I would just send them the save the date and just like pray there's a wedding there. Like, oh, we'll pray. We'll get everything, all logistics all squared away.
All the wedding logistics are actually relatively settled. It's just that I don't have time to make the save the dates.
Okay. Like, even the hard stuff is done. Is just like, okay.
Yeah. We've got our venues. Like, that's all, it's good. I just don't have time to make save the dates.
Yeah.
Yeah, and Jeffrey, my fiance, I mean, he's traveling for work. He's working for a startup based in New York, and so he's busy traveling for work and stuff too. So, we're both like, okay, you do this. No, you do this. No, none of us have time for this. Well, it's okay. Everybody who we would send, they all know that the wedding's happening, so they'll show up whether we send them an invite or not, right?
Right. Just, you have to make it official. Mm. Not just Facebook official.
I'll just email them. We'll just send them an email. Whatever works.
Well, I do want to step backwards for one sec. We always ask this question, like, how did you get involved in web stuff? And like,
How far back do we want to go?
Like when did you see the web? Like, when was the first time you saw the web?
First time I saw the web. We'll go all the way back. I don't know if I've ever like said this in a publicly recorded format before. So this is kind of exciting. I got on AOL when I was like 12, something like that. You know, it was like the free AOL CDs. Mm-hmm. You could get like 180 hours or whatever. And I got really involved, and I was a really big Hanson fan, and I got involved in Hanson like chain newsletters. So this was like before blogs, but it was kind of the same idea. So like you would sign up for this newsletter, and you know, whoever was running it would make like a weekly or monthly account, and they would just send it to like, they would have a special AOL email and they would just send it to all their email contacts, and they like would design them with like, do you remember the like rainbow like text that would like get bigger and smaller, like this AOL thing that was like sparkly text? This is like blingies before you could actually do a GIF or like bling. It was just like you would make each letter a little bit bigger and then a little bit smaller, a little bit bigger, a little bit smaller, like, and like all different colors.
Like HTML or whatever?
It was just in an email, like just rich text emails from AOL.
Oh, okay.
I'll see if I can dig some of this up and like tweet about it, because it's really, really difficult to read, but it was really cool. You know, so they would send out these newsletters, you know, it was like trivia and pictures and like stories and all this stuff. So I did that actually. I ran one for about 8 months before my dad decided he didn't want to pay for AOL anymore. And then he canceled it without telling me. And so then I lost the whole thing and like all my contacts and my email address and everything.
Oh man,
really sad. I know, but right around that time and after that, I got involved with like just, you know, doing websites like on GeoCities and play around with that.
So, did you have a GeoCities fan page for Hanson?
You know, I never did a fan page for them. I did have a GeoCities site, but it was more like a little personal site. And then I quickly moved to having my own domain name.
That's a pretty big jump though. Like, that's not like how did you do that? Just like,
you know, honestly, I don't remember. I don't know what the impetus was for that, to be honest. Like, it was just kind of like the cool thing to do. And I don't know. Like, I wish I knew, like, I wish I had documented that at some point about like what made me take that leap into doing that. But I think it was just kind of a natural next step from like doing, you know, making my own layouts and stuff on GeoCities and like wanting a little more control over it. And it was still really hard to figure all that stuff out. I mean, I remember like trying to figure out how to do hosting and stuff, you know, but I had a lot of friends who were like taking computer science classes and like messing with that stuff too. I had a friend, we put together, I actually built my own computer, my own like desktop tower at one point when I think I was like 14. You know, so like we just as a group, you know, my group of friends, like we were all kind of messing with that. And so, I did a lot of like ugly layout, like iframe pop-up layouts and stuff, you know. Yeah, it's good times. But that, you know, it was kind of funny. Like, that was my hobby. Like, that's what I did. I love to read and I love to do that. And so I would go, you know, and like stay up late on school nights and like redesign my site for the 100th time that year. And like, I like numbered them all. And I provided email hosting actually for a bunch of my friends for a couple of years on my site, because I had all this hosting. And that I somehow convinced my parents to pay for. It was like weird. I think I believed that they didn't like know about my site or read it, but they also paid for it. So I'm like 100% sure that they actually did.
Right.
But I like in this teenage world that it, like they didn't like go see what I was doing on it and like read my horrible poetry. Oh. And it's no longer on the internet. Don't Google it. Like, just don't go. It's not there. I deleted it all, I swear.
you don't have to go look for it. I know it's not there.
It's not there. I deleted it.
So it's GeoCities poetry, right?
Yeah. Okay,
that's not there anymore. Yeah.
That's not there anymore. Actually, it's really sad. I deleted it all on purpose. Like, I saved everything, the stuff I could find down to an external hard drive, and deleted it all offline. And then that hard drive has since crashed. And so I actually don't have any of it, which is kind of a bummer, honestly. Like, I have journals and diaries, you know, from like elementary school years and then recent, but I have this big gap of like high school and college where like all that stuff is lost to me. So like a whole big part of my digital history is gone, which is, it's kind of weird to think like I can't go back and read that stuff even if I wanted to.
Right. Well, and I think that's like, you hit on something. I think it's a, you know, major concern, I think, going forward, is that we've relied on the web. There's a lot of people who are blogging, leaving, you know, content on the web on their own servers, or even the companies, you know, like you see those companies, startups that will just die and collapse, like GeoCities, right? Mm-hmm. Like, hey, we're pulling GeoCities. If you want your content, pull it now. Or Apple with their web hosting. They're like, we're not hosting anymore. So if you don't want it. And then there's like so many people had all these resources, like, you know, they're just like, hey, download this thing off of my Apple website, you know, all these tools.
Gone.
They're just gone. And so what happens, like, you know, when someone's hosting bill, you know, like their credit card, they passed away, you know, God bless them, whatever.
Yeah.
This hypothetical person, God bless them, passes away and their credit card, you know, maxes out or whatever. And, you know, their content's gone. So what happens? What's a good time? All that stuff. So,
I mean, you know, there's stuff like Wayback Machine and all that, but there's no, I mean, that's, you know, hit or miss, you know, they don't get everything. And, and, you know, not to be morbid, but I'm super fascinated by the, like, what happens to our digital history when we die, you know, and there's been some really interesting articles, like Medium posts and stuff about that. You know, like, do you go in, do you have someone who like knows your passwords that can go into your accounts if you pass away? I mean, that's like, I have in my parents' will, I have like their password decrypting stuff, like just in case, you know, that kind of thing. It's really strange to think about, like, how do I access my, you know, partners or, you know, my parents, you know, if something happened, like their bank accounts, like how do you get to that stuff? It's not paper. It's really, really strange, but super fascinating. And, and you know, as far as for personal stuff, like, it's personal stuff is one thing, like your journals and history. Like, I think that's more just of like your own interest. But I think you touched on a really good point about resources. Like, what happens when people have, you know, if they have books or stuff that they've shared, or even blog posts, you know, for us, if you have a link that, you know, is now defunct on an old post, you know, and somebody's looking for that, I think it's really, really hard to update those paths and those content, that content. So it can be hard to find stuff, like if you're looking at like everything's lost and gone. I mean, I don't know if there's a way to even solve that problem, but it would be really cool.
Yeah. I mean, it was like Jeremy Keith always rails about like URLs should be permanent, or, you know, you should like use redirects if you ever change something. But, but you know, like stuff falters, branches fall, you know.
That's part of the beauty of the internet though. It's a.
Yeah. And then we had Facebook on, our content strategy summit. And they now have like a pathway. I don't know exactly, I forgot what the term, like the details are, but they allow people, you know, if someone passes away, for a relative to come in and turn it off or do what they need to do. So, and they haven't had that before. And so that kind of grew. I kind of grew up like Eric Myers' situation with what he did, with so mm-hmm. with what he went through. So it was kind of interesting.
So good for them. That's I think that's probably necessary.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's nice. Yeah, well, this took kind of a morbid turn.
It is kind of morbid, but I mean, I think it's also like part of the, you know, as someone who's seen the web grow up a little bit, mm-hmm. It's been around for a long time, but like the web boom and everything, that it's
right.
It's sort of nice to see it mature and be a medium that's, you know, I think, you know, on par with print, on par with, you know, TV and stuff like that. So no, it's like, you know, we have the legs underneath it now, and it's
right. Absolutely. Broader, so. I mean, when I was doing like my little personal site in GeoCities, like, you know, this was back before, I mean, I'm sure that this was not before internet harassment, but like before that was being talked about, you know, before it was considered a big deal to put your personal information on the web, it just seemed like shouting out into the void. You know, there wasn't any repercussion. It was just like, here's me and I'm going to put my stuff out there. And you didn't think about the future consequences or like what that would do to your professional reputation or, you know, if your friend would read it or like if how it would be stored. It was just, it was kind of a little wild then.
Right.
But it's, you know, now there's more harassment. There's people who have been around long enough to, you know, like have their, you know, to pass away and have their Facebook accounts, you know, languish. And I think you're right. I think the web has definitely matured in that way where we're having these conversations about what happens to our personal data. And I think that's really interesting. And certainly as developers, we have, I think, some obligation to kind of consider that in the work that we do.
Right. Yeah. I think it's, you know, definitely like that golden era of like BA before abuse, you know, before people.
That's not really. I don't think that was ever really true, but we can kind of pretend that it was.
Yeah, there was a time when I didn't get spam. There was a time.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was crazy times, and dinosaurs also walked the earth too.
Yeah, basically same time period. Yeah.
But yeah. So let's get a little bit happier times topics. So GeoCities. So you went from GeoCities creating your own layout. So and then you started just creating your own domain name, and then like at what point did you decide like, hey, this is something
a career
professional, like, you know? Yeah.
Oh, that came much later. It was kind of funny because when I went to college, I actually went to college originally for biology.
Where'd you go to college?
Rensselaer Polytechnic. It's in upstate New York. And the joke is that if you can spell it, you can graduate. Like, that's the test you have to take. It's R-E-N-S-S-A E-S-S-A-L-A-E-R. I don't even know. I can't. Obviously didn't graduate. So I went originally, they have a really, really great genetics and bioinformatics program. And so I originally went for that because at the time, like you could go into computer science, but like web design, like wasn't a thing. And it certainly wasn't a collegiate option. You know, I mean, it barely is now. Mm. And I was really interested in science and I still really am. But it didn't take me very long doing science in school to realize that that was not a good career for me. And they actually had just launched a new degree, communications degree, with a focus in web design or graphic design. And so I was, it started my sophomore year. So I joined up to do that. And it was kind of like, it didn't ever really occur to me that that could be a career. You know, and so when I saw that they were offering that, I was like, I like this and I don't want to do science anymore. And this is something I could do. But even then I was still kind of focusing on the graphic design side of it and looking for a more print-based job. But it turns out the job that I got out of college was a web designer, e.g. making pictures in Photoshop, but for web. And the reason they hired me was because I had HTML and CSS experience from like, you know, doing my own stuff. Like, and I didn't really do any of it in college. I did some, but not very much. And I was like on LiveJournal, like doing LiveJournal layouts and like making graphics and stuff like that. Mm. And I still had my personal site and I made my own like little portfolio site. But it wasn't until I actually got a job and they're like, oh, well, you know, HTML and CSS, we could really use somebody who's on our design team, but can kind of also bridge the gap between our developers and like help them start cutting up the designs and like making the HTML page, you know, before they start actually building it.
Right.
And that was when I kind of realized that I loved it. Was like, I actually like doing this enough that I can do it, and somebody will pay me to do that. Like, that was a really, really cool moment. And I did that for a couple years at a couple different places before I really found my niche, which was when I moved to Austin. I worked at a company called Bizarre Voice, and they do ratings and reviews online. So if you are online shopping and you see, you know, like the 4 or 5 star rating and reviews, that's probably us, unless it's on Amazon. I say us, I haven't worked there in like 4 years, but so when I was working there, I was doing a lot with like templatizing the review display. And that was really when I found my, like, the thing that I love, which is kind of like architecture and refactoring and like the kind of like organizational part of like front end, you know, markup and CSS. And for some reason that just like, it just, that's the thing I like doing it. It's more fun than all the other parts. And I've kind of been able to build a career out of like that one weird little niche part of front end dev, which is kind of cool.
Which is just like just refactoring and just making things modular and just like smoother and.
Yeah. So I know you had Micah Godbolt on the show a couple weeks ago talking about front end architecture. Yeah. And so a lot of that, like I saw his talk at CSS Def Conf last year, I guess. And that really resonated with me. I mean, you know, he's talking about building modular stuff, like going through and kind of figuring out like, what are all the patterns you have? How can you write CSS or SAS to kind of keep it organized and keep it maintainable for the future? Can you write, you know, clean markup and kind of keep a little separation of concerns there? And I just think that stuff is so fascinating. I'm really good at CSS refactoring, doing, you know, SAS architecture stuff. That's something that I just really enjoy. And there's actually a surprising need for it in product organizations. And I mean, I'm sure with, you know, working for clients as well, but my experience has mostly been in product organizations where you have a website or you have an application and you don't get to start over with a new client next time. You know, you have this thing and you have to keep going with it. And so what's the joke? Today's new technologies or tomorrow's legacy code? Like that's, you're making choices that are supposed to, you know, they have to last you a long time. And they have your CSS has to work not just for the site, like the production site, but also for 10 to 100 developers to also use. And that's a really, really different skill set, I think, than writing, like doing CSS animations or like making really cool CSS art or designing for clients. And like, it's just a different, like you're writing code for a different group, you know, for a different use case. And I like it. I think that's a really interesting challenge. And Austin's a good town for those kind of companies. Yeah. So there's a lot of that here.
Yeah. There's, and Micah's writing a book.
Yeah.
Last time I heard he finished his draft. So should be out.
He has, I'm doing a review for him.
Yeah, so I think we're both reviewing it actually.
It's pretty cool stuff. Like a lot of it, you know, and I've talked to Micah a lot about the front end architecture stuff. And so a lot of it was stuff that I kind of already knew or understood, you know, stuff we had talked about, but there was a couple of things in there.
Like what?
What was the thing in particular? There was one thing that he did that was like blowing my mind. It was some like JSON templating of like, JSON something related, like basically like saying like how you can connect different templates. And I don't know. I was like, I never even thought about doing that. Mm. So there's definitely a couple things in there that I was like, I need to implement this immediately at work, which is really cool. I'm excited for him to release that.
Yeah.
His
talk at the DevConf was like, I think one of the more popular ones. So it was great. For this. So,
yeah. It's cool to see talks kind of like live on past their, like original like moment, you know, like to see them on Twitter and like for Micah, like he got to write a book out of it, which is kind of crazy.
Yeah. Which is awesome. Yeah. Because I feel like cause his talk was about you know, I don't want like sound Micah hour. His talk, you know, sometimes people that talk, I'll make it not about Micah, but just, you know, some people have the talk that like is, they find that niche and they can just grow it. And then it can be sure. Book. And then, and some, you know, so it's, I think I've had that one time where like a talk would just like it sailed for like a whole year. Like, it's like people just wanted to see, hear it. And I was like, okay, sure. Yeah, I'll go talk about this. But yeah, so it's
right.
Nice when that happens. But, and it's also great when, new speakers come up and, just grew up. Cause I think, I was talking to Simon, my editor at O'Reilly, but also he chairs, Fluent at O'Reilly, we talked about how, like, you know, there's the whole generation that grew up with a big boom, the first boom of the web, you know, web designers and developers, and how, like, the speakers is kind of like doing different things. Like, they have lives to lead. They're not really interested in speaking anymore. They just,
right.
You know, like, you know, they have, you know, they, you know, whatever case. And so, like, there's been like this, like, bottoming out of speakers, like, hey, where are they coming from? And so, like, that's one of the things I like about CSIS DevConf is that we just opened up to call papers. Mm-hmm. And you know, like, I think SaskConf does the same thing, which is like submit. Yeah. And we don't know who you are, and we do like double blind, and so, like, just, we don't know who you are, we're having a party at this date, so we hope yeah, someone yeah. submits a proposal.
But yeah, yeah, I mean, yeah. The speaker question, I mean, that is so tough. With, like, it's good. It is always good to get new voices. And I definitely believe there is a lack of diversity of voices at most events. You know, and even at SaskConf this year, I mean, we tried really hard, and I'm really proud of the diversity work that we did. But I think there's still a ton of room for improvement. We don't have a person of color, a Black person on our lineup. And I really wish we did. We had some submit, but it's kind of a tough line between, like, what's the content, you know, what's the focus of your event? What kind of submissions are you getting? You know, and for us, I just believe it's all about outreach. You know, you are, I think, so we did, I wrote a blog post on the SaskConf site about it. I can tweet it, we can link to it, but, we did kind of a new thing with our submissions this year, where we did an open submission on GitHub. So instead of doing anonymous from the beginning, we had them like with people's names and everything on GitHub. And then we did a first pass through those. And then we did kind of a second round. We had a whole bunch where we kind of couldn't decide, like, these are all so good, we have to narrow them down some way. And so then we anonymized those and sent those to a panel, which was a little bit more manageable than sending like all 80 or 90 of them to a review. And I think that's kind of my problem with the fully, like, blind, like, long survey list. I mean, like, I love the idea of the community voting, but when you get to page 12 and there's been 8, you know, like, talks about the same thing, you're like, I don't know. I don't have any idea which one of these is going to be good. And so I'm always really curious how that data comes back, you know, from those big surveys, because, like, does the one at the end just get fewer votes because it's like people's eyes are, like, crossed on page 12? Like,
yeah. Yeah. Know. Yeah. It's just like for DevConf, it's, we look at the top results, like how many slots we have. And then we see, like, you know, okay, here we go. And then, we'd make judgment calls, where if we have like 6 talks on Flexbox, it's just
throwing right. It like, this can't.
Yeah. Like, and they're all in the top, you know, list. Like, it's like, no, I can't have 6 talks on Flexbox, you know? And, so we actually narrow it down and just try to see, like, you know, which one. You know, and then we also ask around. It's like, hey, you know, I do have a small panel of people, like, I trust, and say, like, hey, of these flex boxes, which one would you like to see?
Yeah.
Which would you like to see? Cause, like, I think the thing is, like, I try to understand, and value, like, my view of the industry, but my view is my view. And so,
right.
So I need to trust people, like, who are, like, in the trenches, you know, who I think is in the trenches all every day, someone who has a different aspect, more
designer, right, but also people who are very different than you.
Yeah. And so, and then they bring their own, you know, point of view to it. So it's really helpful when we do it. So, but yeah, I'm really glad, because, like, it's, but yeah, I just like the fact that it's new voices. It's really refreshing. to hear new people. And like, and the story I always go with is Rachel Neighbors, you know, came to our first DevConf, and you know, now she's, you know, she's awesome.
You're famous.
She's famous. They're like, yay! And then but even during that talk, during that one conference, I still remember because I was outside, like, you know, putting out fires as you do as a conference organizer. Yeah. And just like, and talking to her and talking to Tab Atkins afterwards, and Tab was like, yeah, she says some really good things about web animation. And so she was happy that, you know, she, Tab was there, a person from Google who works on the specs for W3 at 3C, and that things could be improving for web animation, like, you know, about 3 or 4 years from now. So like,
it's kind of a fact that an experienced speaker is going to give a better talk. I mean, in almost all cases, I think there are lots of experienced speakers who are not great, but I know, at least from my own experience, like the first time you do it, it's way worse than, you know, the second or third or fifth or 10th time. But that's a totally different problem than, you know, getting a diversity of voices and a diversity of content. I think, you know, one of the things that we tried to do this year was have mentors for all of our speakers. We do have some first-time speakers and some, you know, experienced speakers as well. And so what we did is we set them up in a Slack with mentors. So we assigned, you know, two or three or four to a mentor. And so we're reviewing outlines and looking at their slides, and they're all going to do a run through on video chat with their mentor. And I mean, even for experienced speakers, if you're giving a new talk, it's good to go through it and like see how long things take. And, you know, if you're jokes make sense, if your slide transitions make sense. It's really good to be able to have that practice. And I think that's really important. And especially for new speakers, I think some of the fear is like, well, I don't know how to do this. Yeah. You know, and there's lots of like written blog posts and like, here's how you be a new speaker, you know, but it's just not the same as like having somebody there to like help you and mentor. Sam Kapp, I know she does a show sometimes. She's one of our speaker mentors, and Scott Kellum, and Jen Myers, who's amazing. She volunteered to do that for us as well. And Micah. So we have a really, really cool crew. I think I'm missing somebody. Oh, Mina. Yeah. Mina Markham is helping us also. I was like, I'm me, Claudia. Yeah. Anyway. So it's a really great group. And, so it's nice too, as an organizer, to kind of like see some of that content coming in and beforehand, you know, and, you know, when we went through all of our submissions, we were kind of looking for a really interesting mix of content, of topics, short form, long form. We're doing a ton of lightning talks this year. Mm-hmm. And we're trying to not say lightning talks. It rolls off the tongue so easy. But we're trying to say like short form and long form, because I think some people will disagree with me, but I think that a lot of talks, a lot of the long, like 40-minute talks, mm-hmm. really don't have enough content to be long talks. They're like 20-minute talks with a lot of filler and like rambling. And I mean, there are some things that like you need the hour, you know, you need the 40 minute, but we wanted to showcase a lot more content. So we have, I think, the seven or eight short form talks and like six or seven long ones, four workshops and five discussions, I think. So it was just like the amount of content is just like totally, totally unreal. I don't know how we're going to pack it all in there, but we'll figure it out. But yeah, I mean, that's kind of what we were looking for, and you know, working with our speakers to make sure that they're going to give the best talks that they can give. And I would love to see more conferences do something similar, like have mentors and, kind of focus on that for their new speakers or when their old ones too.
Well, I think that's a great idea. I never really thought about using a Slack channel as a mentorship type of pathway. That's pretty smart.
Pro organizer tip. Get your speakers all and your organizers all in the same Slack channel. It's the best thing.
Oh, really?
We're doing all of our, like even like lodging stuff and like flights. Like I don't have to email all my speakers and like wait for them to email me back and like see if stuff gets lost in emails. Like I just message them. And so it's all right there. So convenient. And then they can all talk to each other. So there's already, you know, like friendships and camaraderie happening. And so that networking that you get, at the conference is already starting to begin, you know, with our speakers. Yeah. They'll be more comfortable with each other.
Yeah.
You know, and then when you're not spending time doing that at the event, then you have more energy and time, you know, to talk to attendees and focus on your talk. And so I mean, it's been amazing all around. If I have one conference organizing tip, it would be put all your people in a Slack channel, because it is super, super helpful.
Yeah.
Everybody seems to really like it too.
Cool. Awesome. That's great. That's great. Yeah.
Okay. This is like the SaaS conf hour. It's like all I've been thinking about lately. It's all I can.
Oh man. Yeah. I mean, if you want to talk about DevConf, we can talk about that.
Yeah. That's bummed I'm missing it this year.
It's pretty. Yeah. It's pretty awesome. Yeah. I'm sorry. You're not coming. It sounds like you're pretty busy. So
I chose when it was released. I was like, I really want to go, but there's no way I can do all of this.
Well, I appreciate it. It's in Austin. So I appreciate, now I do want to go back to some other things, but I just was like, you appreciate you putting it in Austin, and I do appreciate the logistical dance of trying to find a new venue. It falls through. So, New Orleans was actually, last year we did New Orleans. Mm-hmm. And which were you were there, and that venue was awesome because it was actually in French Quarter. It was a beautiful,
beautiful hotel.
Like, you know, we fell in love with it just through the photos. You know,
it was so ostentatiously French. It's really great.
Oh my god, it was so beautiful. And I called them up, and they was like, "I would love to do an event there," and they said no. And I was like, oh.
"Why?"
I was just Christmas, like, there's a no, yeah, we're too busy. I don't know what, like, you know, it was like their salesperson said no to me. Like, so the person who wants to sell me something says no, I don't know. And so I was like, look, like, I have this window, I have this gigantic
tell
window.
Tell me when,
squeeze me in. And, you know, I have some parameters, like, you know, I don't want to do on Thanksgiving week, but you know, just let me, let me know. And it's like, no, and it's just like, oh, so we went and researched all the other venues that are in New Orleans, and they're all like, you know, like, they're all nice hotels, but they're all like modern.
Right. Hotels. Just like not New Orleans.
Yeah. So it's like places that have withstand people being drunk, you know, you know, it's not, it doesn't have that class of, you know, of the nice hotel that's been around forever. So, and so I was like, oh man, it's just like, just dragging. And I was just like, I just did a Hail Mary. I was like, I went back and they were like, are you sure? You know, and it's cause like, I've checked every other hotel. And they have space, but I really do not want to. I want to do it here. And they're like, yes. And I'm like, yeah, of course we have an opening. I'm like, I don't know who I talked to before, but that guy's a jerk.
Or just, he's having a bad day. We had a hell of a time finding a date because there's something going on in Austin, like literally every weekend. And so it was like, okay, well, it can't be ACL. It can't be any of these other conferences that are happening, like CSS Dev Comp, can't be the same week as that. It can't be RubyConf. It can't be any in-town football games on the weekend. It can't be Fun Fest. It can't be MotoGP weekend, or sorry, Formula One weekend, which is like next weekend. So, I mean, the week that we picked, I think it's like the only weekend that's like, but I don't know. But there's probably something happening that we don't know about. But
yeah. And then we did Artifact in Austin. This is like,
That was a good one.
Yeah, we should just get like just get drunk and talk about it. But talk about the problem. But we'll wait till after the conference. But it was like we did ours at Alamo, right?
The draft house, yeah.
It was downtown Alamo, and then Sunday is like the day before. We're like just like going gangbusters, trying to get everything set up. And Sixth Street is blocked off because of BeCon Festival. I'd never heard of the Pecan Festival. I was like, what the heck is a Pecan Festival? And why are we having it? And then I learned that we have Pecan Festival twice a year.
Every year.
I was like,
twice a year, yeah.
Yeah, like, why do we have pecans twice a year? Like, I don't understand. Like,
because Sixth Street used to be Pecan Street.
Yeah, I don't understand.
Why not? Because there's always something going on.
Yeah, there's always something going on. But yeah.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah,
anyway. Great. But it's fun to do. I love it. But so Bizarre Voice, you're there.
Yeah.
You found your passion, your web passion is refactoring.
I hate the term passion, though. I got to tell you.
What word should I be using besides
passion? You know, I don't know. I haven't really found a good replacement, because I know when people say passion, what they mean is the thing that you really like and that are you really excited about and enjoy doing. But there's an article, Avdi wrote this article called The Passion Gospel, and I love sharing this, and I guess I think it's really, really interesting. And he says that, you know, the word passion means something that you are like, you will die for, like something that you are so, so involved in, that's just like your whole life. And he says, most people, when they say passionate, they mean motivated or enjoy their work. And like people understand that, you know, but he says, we all want people who care deeply about our craft, but is passion the right word? This is a word people use to describe the deepest desires of their hearts, things they would sacrifice and die for. Mm-hmm. My enthusiasm for programming is tremendous, but compared to how I feel about giving my children a safe and fulfilling life, it's not even in the same category.
Right.
One of those topics can bring me to tears, and it isn't programming. Anyway, so he talks about like how it's kind of like a dangerous word. And we talk about, you know, we expect people to like give all their time to their job and like program in their spare time and like right. be so passionate about something they're going to argue about like tabs and spaces and like how important this is. And like, really, like, we just, yeah, like, yeah, I'll share the link with you. It's a really, really cool read.
Yeah, definitely. Cause I feel like, you know, passion is also like, you know, I don't know what the term is, but using the same term, but in a different context, like, you know, your passion mm-hmm. for work, you know, like putting the context of like work, this is what I would like to do. I mean, I'm not sure there's a specific.
Yeah, I don't know what another word is.
Yeah, but my passion for life is like, you know, give my kids an awesome life, life experience.
His point resonated with me around like passion being like uncontrolled emotion and like something that you would like take a stand for, you know, versus like, I'm fulfilled in my work. I find it challenging. I like doing it. I like my coworkers. Like, it's kind of a different thing. And I think he talks a lot about how, you know, in the tech industry, we kind of expect it to be people's lives mm-hmm. as well as their careers. And we kind of look down on people who like just work from 9 to 5, like those programmers who work at like uncool companies that like don't have beer pong and, you know, pool tables and stuff like that. Like, they just want a paycheck. Like, they're not real programmers because right. they're not passionate about it. And right. and I think that's a really, really dangerous thing. It's another aspect of the mentality that, you know, can be really inclusive, you know, or can be really exclusive and not inclusive,
right.
You know, to people who maybe like can't afford to do that in their spare time or can't afford to go to events, you right. know, there's as cool as events are, like, is that what makes you a good programmer or a good designer if you have all this money and free time to like go to industry events? Yeah. Anyway, so sorry, a little bit of a soapbox there, but
no, I totally agree with
you. I think it's an interesting discussion.
Yeah. Cause I feel like just because, like one of the things about Environments for Humans, like we do the online conferences, is that we want to be able to give people information no matter where they are in the world, you know, yeah. access to speakers and ask mm-hmm. them questions directly. And the goal is that they themselves would build better environments for humans right. Through their work and stuff like that. But also, you know, and no matter what that means, is like in terms of, yeah, they have an idea, maybe they get an idea, inspiration for a new concept or something like that. But also for building workflows that save them time so they right. can go to work them. At 5 o'clock and right. do something like go to their family.
Balance. Or, yeah.
yeah. And so that's kind of like, you know, where Environments for Humans came from, was just that.
Yeah. No, that's really cool. Yeah, I love the online events. I think that's, we need more of that kind of thing and more ways to share that stuff online and, you know, be involved in communities. You know, we work on our computers and we can talk to anybody anywhere in the world on our machines, but we still come to offices to talk to each other on our machines, mm-hmm. you know, and I think we definitely need to expand that and have people working remotely and sharing information remotely, you know, without the harassment of Twitter, really, you know, but like in a nice, like constructive way and not in a, you know, not using the internet as another way to establish, you know, dominance and cliques and right. make inclusive or exclusive communities.
Yeah. It pains me when someone like equates Twitter to just like as an example of like the example of online harassment though. So that's
well,
just, yeah.
For a lot of people, it is. I mean, that's yeah. it's really true. It's a platform where people can connect, And in a lot of ways, that's amazing. I know I've made a ton of friends and a ton of connections on Twitter that I would never have otherwise made. But
likewise.
It also, because it's public and people can connect with you, you open yourself up for unsavory types and straight up harassment, but also just like some people who don't filter their thoughts very well to strangers on the internet. And I feel like that's certainly that part, at least, is a tackleable problem. Like, hey, when you're talking to somebody else on the internet, they don't have the same experience as you. They don't have the same background as you. They may have a different opinion as you, and it's probably worth thinking about what you're going to say before you say it.
Right.
We're all guilty of sending a tweet that came out all wrong.
Not me. My tweets are always sanitized.
Perfect. Yeah.
Perfect. Like, never a negative thought whatsoever. Mm-hmm. But
anyway.
But yeah. So like, yeah. But yeah, I was talking to Sam Richard about this, and it's just like empathy and making sure people have that. So, and
yeah,
not so much for like, no social media, but just also
for engineers
and engineers and something like that too.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Sure. So yeah. Anyway, yeah, I asked me about Bizarre Voice and like my work, and I derailed that whole thing.
This is how it usually goes. Don't worry about it.
Perfect.
Yeah. So, but yeah, but just definitely come back to it. Bizarre Voice. Mm-hmm. So you're working at Bizarre Voice. You don't have it's what you love to do or like what you like to do. I'm not going to say passion. I'm not going to say passion, whatever. But a lot of cool people work with Bizarre Voice. So you're there for like, what happens next? Like, what's?
Oh yeah, I was there for like 3 years. And I ended up going to a company called Square Root, which they're growing really, really quick in Austin. They do, they have an app for operations. So like when I was there, it was mainly for car manufacturers. So we worked a lot with Nissan. And they basically, our app would track the OEM visits to dealers, like sales data, marketing data. So just kind of like helping them do all their day-to-day operating stuff. Mm-hmm. And so when I went there, they're much, much smaller than they are now, but I kind of got an opportunity to do some of that architectural work for the first time from scratch. And so they had multiple small applications that they were refactoring and redesigning into one big one. And so they hired a designer and myself. And so that was definitely like, I've been hired for this job, but I don't know if I can actually do this.
Yeah.
It was a real, real challenge, but that was a really, really eye-opening role for me. I was working with a lot of offshore developers, a couple in-house developers, a designer with this huge application that, hundreds of people were using every day. It was, saving them a ton of money, ton of operating money. And, how do you make that a good architecture for a lot of developers? How do you make a good design and a good UX for your users? How do you keep those in sync when you're changing and adding new features? I was the only front-end person and we had like 5 offshore dev teams.
Oh, wow.
And so there was a lot of, I think it really kind of honed my sense of like how to code for other developers, trial by fire there.
So what did you learn? Like what did you learn? Like, what was it? Something that helped you out to deal with 5 dev teams that were offshore?
Oh man. Documentation. And I know that's not a surprise, but if we had a grid system and I didn't have to explain how to my developers how to use it because it was really well documented in the file. And so when they were going to go in and make something, it was just really clear to them like what they should be doing. And also, the biggest thing that I learned was just how to code like safely, I guess, like how to make sure things are kind of bulletproof. I couldn't code review everything that every developer was doing. And so I couldn't force them or know if they were going to make a button that was a link or a button or an input or, God help me, a div. Like, I just, you didn't know. But what I can do is in the CSS, write it such that no matter what it is, those eventualities are covered. And that's really different. It's a really different mentality for writing CSS than when you're, designing a personal site or designing a really beautiful, like, client site with a lot of like cool type and graphics. We had very little color, very few graphics. It was pretty bare bones, but it was about making it do anything and like making sure all these eventualities were covered. And so having a good file architecture, so like all your, you know, partials, like things are separated, like your functional stuff is separate from your presentational stuff. It was a lot of that kind of, those are the kind of lessons that I learned, and those have served me really well in later jobs and at the job I'm at now.
Yeah, it seems like it would reinforce your you know, your like of refactoring to be able to like,
well, they didn't scare me away, so
to actually like build things that you were already kind of refactored as much as possible and bulletproof concept as much as possible. So it actually helped you like on the front end side, like the beginning part, as well as the
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely.
Cool. Wow. Awesome. Yeah. And so Square Root, is that the name?
Square Root.
Mm-hmm. Square Root. Okay, that's an awesome name for a company. I love that. And then so Square Root, and then
So I was at Makersquare for a little while teaching. I took about 8 months and went and taught for them. I did a front end class in the evenings for them. It was a really, really fun experience. Love teaching, but that program unfortunately didn't end up lasting a whole lot longer after that. I know they're still doing their full-time like Rails and JavaScript focused full-time courses, but their evening thing, we shut that down. But it was really cool, and I learned a whole lot about, you know, how to talk to beginners and how to teach, and I loved doing it, and I would definitely, you know, I think like workshops and stuff will probably in my future going to doing some more of that kind of stuff. But last November, so I guess it's been almost a year. I went to Retail Me Not. So I'm,
I do have one story, cause I was there.
Oh, yeah.
I was sort of in there because you did our SaaS summit in November.
Yes.
That's when we have it. And then,
last year.
And then you were a speaker there. And one of the coolest things I think I've seen was that, I think you were, it was like kind of like you had to, you know, like things in, you know, you were stopped speaking, you know, the job ended at Makersquare.
Yeah.
So you were looking for work. And then you came in, knocked it out of the park. Cause we actually like, you know, have like, you watch it produce live, and actually we had people come in for free, watch it live. And then
I was
there. And you were there, like, you knocked out of the park. And then, like, and then during a break, we're like, hey, how are you doing with the, you know, are you okay with the job things? Like, yeah, I got 20 offers.
Yeah.
I was like, that was like the most
20 offers. But I did. No, it was cool. I got, I didn't get 20 offers, just to be really clear on that, but I did I tweeted about it, and I just like an unbelievable response, from the community. I actually put together, a file, like a just, I was like, it was probably like 30 or 40, like, just like things, like people are like, you should talk to them. But I like kind of ended up collecting this like list of stuff, and I hope somebody else found a job through that. I know I sent a whole bunch of them to my friends who were looking. But the coolest story out of this whole thing was that I had an interview with Juan Buritica. He's doing like JavaScript Columbia, and he works for this company called Ride. I know a lot of like, he knows all the Brooklyn JS people. That was a terrible bio, Juan, if you're listening to this, I apologize. Anyway, I had an interview with Juan. He's working at a company called Ride, and they're working on ride sharing for people who commute. Mm-hmm. So like if you work at the same job, you can commute together and use the app and share costs and stuff like that. And I had an interview with him, and it was a more JavaScript focused role. And so Juan is like me, very talkative and outgoing. And so I'm on this like Google chat, like hang out with him, and he's going on and on about this job. Mm-hmm. And I know like 5 or 10 minutes into him talking that it's not going to be the right role for me.
Right.
Just because of the focus. But I'm like, I know exactly who to point you to.
Yeah.
I know the perfect person for this role. And so I finally, like, we finally got, I didn't want to just like interrupt and be like, no, sorry, like, shut up. Like, you know, cause I was interested, and I was like, okay, this is going to be really weird. Like, but I know it's not for me, but I know who you should talk to. And then the added complication was that this person that he should talk to was my fiance, Jeffrey. And so I didn't want to be like, he should talk to my, you know, to my fiance, like, just because I wanted him to know that it was like really based on merit and not just because I was like, oh, my fiance needs a job.
But he was really, really interested in alternate transportation. And he was looking to do more JavaScript stuff. But he also has a really great design background and front end like CSS skills. And that, I mean, it was like the perfect role in all these ways. It's remote. And I was like, okay, you need to talk to Jeffrey. And so Jeffrey ended up getting that job out of that interview, which was really, really cool. So two good things came out of that. And so then I ended up going to RetailMeNot, which was it was really sudden. I got the connection and spent some time talking to Cravey, Mike Cravey, who was my manager here for a while. And when they went ahead and made me an offer, Mike was like, okay, well, I want you to come in for a couple meetings, you know, and I was planning to start in like another 2 weeks or something around Thanksgiving. He's like, well, I want you to come in for these meetings. Oh, and this one, and this one, and this one. You know what? Why don't you just come in on Monday and we'll just like figure it out. And so I started, like, I signed the offer on Friday and I started on like Monday or Tuesday morning.
Oh, wow. That's crazy. Yeah.
Which, yeah, it was really nuts. But it was okay. It was fun. So like I got there and they were like, computers, like, we'll figure it out. Just go to your meetings. But it was a lot of fun. And I really like it. It's a really good team. And speaking of Bizarre Voice, Lon Ingram just joined us, Lonzy on Twitter. So he just joined my team a couple months ago. So we get the dad puns in person now every day.
Nice.
If you're following Lon on Twitter, you know what I'm talking about.
So, that brings us up to speed, right? That's like,
yeah, I think that's it. And hopefully, so we're working on a project, that I think, you know, Micah is probably going to love. And, I know Gina from Salesforce that, you know, they're working on a lot of like, she does a lot of like style guide, you know, shared style guide stuff. And I think this is kind of the next like phase. We're talking about like style guides was last year. And this year, I think it's going to be a lot about, I don't know a good term for it. Some people have been calling it like style APIs. But basically what we're doing is we're building a separate repository of our styles and templates and serving those into our main application. So we have a set of ingredients, we're calling them ingredients, but you know, patterns or what have you, that are kind of like approved by design. And so, you know, we have the header and the footer and, you know, sidebars and filters and buttons and a carousel and, the coupon card and all the forms and like, you know, all these patterns that are reusable. And those are served up. We install it as an NPM package and serve them up. And so if you're building a new page, first you import that stuff, you can reuse the templates that you want, and then you can add on top of it if you have like custom one-off stuff for that page. And so instead of your CSS living in the main project, it lives kind of in this separate place and we kind of like control what's being done. And I think that's like the next step. Like I know some other companies are doing it. Gina at Salesforce, I think Salesforce was the first one that I heard of doing it, but I know we're not alone. And I really think that's the way that that kind of stuff is going to go, especially for big applications. And so we're well into that, and it's working well so far. I'm hoping to be able to do some talks about it and stuff in the future after SaskConf is over.
That's awesome. Yeah. So
one thing at a time.
So that's more like, so you would like launch and install it, and then you have to maintain it. Right. So like you get like a new refresh, but then you have to maintain the like HTML structure, but you can change the CSS.
Yeah. So with the templates are kind of the big question right now, like exactly how we're going to do that. Mm-hmm. Up to this point, we've only been serving the SAS, and we're working on a way to serve the templates, you know, that could be reusable, and like, how can we serve up the same template in all these different like states and, you know, like pages and like have different content in it. I know Lon and my coworker Luke and Mohit, they have put together a proposal for that we're going to hopefully start implementing soon, or they're already in the middle of it, I think. Mm-hmm. So I mean, we with stuff like this, it's a little trial and error. Like you have, even with the CSS, the way we're serving that, like we kind of started down one path and did that. It was like kind of working, and then we kind of revised it a little bit once we actually had some teams using it and kind of seeing, you know, what was working for them and where they got tripped up. I'm more details on that in the future.
As you develop. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Cool.
Well, awesome. You know, it's one of those things where like, I want to give talks about it, but in the future, right? Like right now I don't have any real.
Right. Yeah.
Like, we're just doing it. I'm just like, hopefully it'll work. You know, we'll figure it out.
Yeah. That's a great concept. Yeah. I think I like the idea, and I'd love to have you back on the show and talk.
Yeah.
Deep dive into it.
I will totally, I'll give you all an update next time. We'll cool. do it again, like next year. This
same well, you know. Time next year.
Yes, this date next year.
Okay, cool. So yeah. That's good. I know you have to run, and which I'm yeah, thankful for your time. So
thank
how
you
can
for
people
having me on?
Yeah, how can people reach out to you on the web and
yeah?
Find you.
I'm on Twitter. It's Elise Holiday, and I'll let you tweet it so that I don't have to try to spell it for everybody. Two L's and an A, no I. And also for everybody who's a non-breaking space podcast listener, we have a SaskConf discount code for you all, just special for you. It's $75 off, and it's NBSPTV. So it's the same as the podcast. You are welcome. I hope you'll come, listeners. I hope you'll come and hang out with us. It's gonna be a good time. And yeah, send me a tweet if you have any questions or anything. Just let me know. I'll be glad to chat.
Cool. Awesome. Well, I appreciate you coming on the show again, and hope to talk to you soon.